Hello, welcome to the Saturn edition of your local talking newspaper, covering St Albans and the surrounding district. This edition is for the week ending May 11th, 2019. I'm Rosemary, one of your readers for tonight, and I'm joined in the studio by Jackie, Kalpana and Peter. The piece of music you have just heard is The Curlew, and we will play all of it at the end of the recording. As usual, our thanks go to Goffby, who composed the music and has given us permission to use it. All the news items in this recording have been taken from the Hearts Advertiser, and we will finish with a summary of the radio programmes we think you might enjoy over the next week. Here is Jackie with the first item.
City centre businesses are targeted by burglars. Businesses are being warned to stay alert after multiple shops in St Albans city centre were targeted by burglars. Staff at independent comic shop Chaos City Comics came to work on May the 2nd to discover that criminals had thrown a paving slab through the shop window. The burglars had stolen many figurines and a children's hospital charity collection box from the Heritage Close shop. Manager Luke Ridge said afterwards, "We are not going to let a few individuals stop us doing what we do best." Owner Marina Desclavis described the break-in as very upsetting. Later that same day, a similar incident was narrowly avoided, this time at a city centre jeweller's. Hearts police rushed to Kings Hill Jewellery on Marketplace at about 10:30 p.m. because the burglar alarm was going off. An offender had tried to break into the store, but they did not manage to get into the premises and nothing was stolen. Early last month, on April the 8th, criminals broke into a fast food restaurant on Victoria Street, H&H Fried Chicken and Kebabs. They got into the premises via a back window and unsuccessfully tried to break into the tills. St Albans Neighbourhood Sergeant Paul Caro said, "We are currently following up on a number of leads, including examining CCTV and looking to identify several potential witnesses and vehicles in the area when these incidents occurred. These are busy areas in the city centre, so we're hopeful that someone will be able to provide information which will help us catch those responsible. These crimes are unusual in the city centre, and we are working with the retailers to ensure that crime prevention measures are in place." According to the newest figures released by the Office for National Statistics, the ONS, 6,574 burglaries were reported to Hearts Police in the year ending December 2018. Of that total, 4,783, that's 72%, were residential, and 1,791, 27%, were non-residential. This is a 6% decrease compared to the year ending December 2017. There were also 9,216 incidents of criminal damage and arson reported to the force in Hertfordshire. This represents a 9% decrease compared to the year ending December 2017. Crime Reduction Inspector at Hearts Police, Andrew Palfreyman, said there has been lots of work to address burglary in the county. "We have carried out numerous campaigns to help inform and advise residents how to make their homes more secure and have also increased the number of homes that are in neighbourhood watch schemes. We have also focused on identifying criminals involved in crimes like burglary by setting up dedicated teams in each area to target burglars and make the county a difficult place for them to operate. We have taken a similar approach to criminal damage in some areas, where we have invested a lot of time and effort to identify and take action against key offenders. St Albans Business Improvement District, the BID, said it is working closely with its partners in light of the St Albans incidents. BID manager Helen Burridge said, "Our excellent transport connections and quality shops unfortunately make us a target for the actions of unsavoury individuals, but thankfully these are isolated and considerably less frequent than the national average. The ONS data shows more than 400,000 cases were reported nationwide. This means Hertfordshire represents 1.5% of burglaries around the country." Helen added, "We are supporting Chaos City Comics in their clean-up operation and working with Heritage Close on making their space safe for their tenants. We are also building our relationship with the police through the recently appointed Safer Neighbourhood Inspector Andy Wiseman. She said any businesses which would like to be included in a quarterly retailers group to ensure criminals in St Albans are found and prosecuted should contact BID. This comes after a spate of residential burglaries around the district in December last year. Jewellery, technology, cash and Asian gold were among the items stolen. Anyone with information about these crimes should contact the police on 101 or Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111.
Hello, this is Peter, and the headline to my first article is HMS St Albans to lead Royal Navy salute to commemorate 75th anniversary of D-Day. HMS St Albans will lead a Royal British Legion ship in a salute marking the 75th anniversary of the Normandy landings. The ship, which was the last of the Royal Navy's Type 23 frigates to be built, will play a substantial role in the Ministry of Defence tribute to the remaining D-Day veterans. On Wednesday, the 5th of June, at 6:25 p.m, the evening before the anniversary of the landing, the Royal British Legion ship, carrying up to 300 D-Day veterans, all over 90 years old, will embark from Portsmouth and head to Normandy, mimicking the voyage in 1944. HMS St Albans will escort the ship along with four smaller Royal Navy vessels, with other ships docked alongside paying their respects. The ship will then be met by a flotilla which includes frigates, mine hunters, small patrol craft and support vessels, which will sail past in salute with sailors lining the decks. Members of the public will line up at key vantage points to wave off the veterans as they retrace the journey they made 75 years before. Bob Gamble, OBE, Assistant Director of the Commemorative Events at the Royal British Legion, said, "The 75th anniversary of the D-Day landings will be a momentous occasion, and every Normandy veteran that will participate will be treated as a VIP throughout to ensure they have the memorable and remarkable experience they deserve." The commemorations will also include airborne landings over Normandy, with members of the Army's 16th Air Assault Brigade dropping from aircraft alongside French Army paratroopers, veterans and reenactors. At 7:26 a.m. on Thursday, the 6th of June, a lone piper will mark the exact moment a British soldier first landed on Gold Beach at Arromanches in Normandy. Defence Secretary Gavin Williamson said, "75 years ago, troops from 14 Allied countries united together, many on the south coast of Britain, before launching the historic operation to liberate occupied Europe. Britain must always keep the legacy of that special generation alive. I urge people to join our armed forces in showing that all of us, young and old, will never forget the price they paid for the freedom and peace we now enjoy." HMS St Albans is based in Portsmouth and captained by Commander Chris Ansell.
Hello, this is Kalpana, and a beaming picture of Councillor Chris White, the St Albans Liberal Democrats leader, accompanies this next article entitled "New Era of Politics Following Turbulent Election." The St Albans Liberal Democrat group leader has reflected on what proved to be a jubilant election night for his party. Toppling the Conservative administration, including St Albans District Council leader Alec Campbell, the Lib Dems gained 7 seats across the area. This brings their powerhouse up to 25 seats. Although not quite enough to secure a majority, they are now the largest party in this district. Group leader Chris White said, "We are really pleased. It exceeded our expectations. It was quite a night, to be honest. To become the largest party is very significant. What that means in terms of administration, I don't really know. We need to talk to other groups, but we are in pole position to carry out our manifesto." He believes Brexit's uncertainty, a high-profile people's vote campaign, and support for former parliamentary candidate Daisy Cooper can all be thanked for the substantial Lib Dem gains. St Albans bucked the trend by swinging Remain in the 2016 referendum, and local pro-EU groups have since garnered large memberships. He said, "We now see the full horror of what Brexit means for this area in terms of jobs and important institutions like the Rothamsted Research. It is something we can't afford, individually or in the community, and it's time to think again. One priority for the Liberal Democrats will be lowering St Albans District Council's emissions, Councillor White said, so the authority is effectively carbon-free. Questioned on whether this is feasible, Chris answered, "If we don't try, we don't find out. And getting as close to that situation we can is better than where we are now." He suggested policies. To that end could include implementing an electric taxi fleet, along with all the associated infrastructure, such as charging points. Highlighting a need for more affordable housing, Councillor White said, "So many people can't afford to live in this area any longer. Buying or renting in St Albans is not sustainable. More and more people who are working in shops and pubs and restaurants and shops can't live in St Albans. My kids left the area because it's too expensive." Local rather than national initiatives should be leading the way in making sure these homes are delivered, he said. Councillor White also hopes the local plan is approved by the Secretary of State. The key thing is to have a local plan in place. The moment we have a local plan, we can get on to refreshing it. We can't get on to refreshing it at the moment, and we are miles behind other authorities. St Albans District Council is currently waiting for the Secretary of State for Housing and Communities and Local Government, James Brokenshire's thoughts on the document, which outlines where 15,000 new homes will be built in the district before 2036. Investing in community facilities is also on the Liberal Democrat agenda, Councillor White said. There are a few specific projects and campaigns currently underway. In June last year, 1,000 people signed a petition created by the Cotton Mill and Sopwell Hub, or CASH for short, asking St Albans District Council to create a community area in the centre. The Fleetville Community Centre new building project is looking to replace its existing structure on Royal Road, which was originally built in the 1940s as a temporary structure. Councillor White said, "Some of what we have is literally falling to pieces. We have to look to the community and at the community centres that are not falling apart, because that is just not on. We have to look after our community sites before they become derelict. It is not the way we want to live." He said the Lib Dems will also be looking to overhaul the way planning is conducted at St Albans District Council, starting with the existing application portal. "We have a much more creative approach to planning, and this will become more vital," he said. "Also, what is the plan for our city centre? What is the plan for St Peter Street, for protecting the businesses that rely upon St Albans, and the situation with the business rates? Yes, it is a national problem, but we have to have a plan. Otherwise, we will wake up in 5 years' time with far less places to eat and drink."
And now, more on the elections. This article is entitled "Collateral Damage of Brexit Politics," says former council leader ousted by a Lib Dem. And we have a picture of the former leader of St Albans District Council, Alec Campbell. The leader of St Albans Council has been ousted from his position after losing his seat at this year's local elections. Alec Campbell has served as Conservative leader of St Albans District Council since May 2017. But on May the 2nd, his ward was pulled from beneath him by a Liberal Democrat. Councillor Will Tucker won the St Albans ward seat with 1,365 votes. That is 860 votes ahead of Alec. This comes amid a drastic reshuffling, which sees the Liberal Democrats elected to the most seats, but without winning overall control. Alec said, "I am very disappointed, as you would expect, after 8 years as a councillor, and we have delivered a lot." The councillors that have been elected will work out what they want to do, and the Lib Dems have the largest group of local councillors now, so they will be looking at forming an administration because it is quite difficult to operate with a minority. The former Huawei employee believes the result is a reflection on national politics, with Brexit negotiations led by Tory Prime Minister Theresa May proving most controversial. He said, "A message we had been getting on the doorstep from Conservative voters is that they are unhappy with the situation in central government. The Conservative voters were pretty divided. Some of them want to remain, some want a soft Brexit, and some want a hard Brexit. Turnout was only marginally lower than last year, so that suggests to me that some Conservative voters changed their vote." He said he is proud of what SADC has achieved under his leadership, including reaching a more than 60% recycling rate and submitting the local plan to the Secretary of State. Alex suggested former St Albans Conservative leader and commercial and development portfolio holder Councillor Julian Daly, housing and inclusion portfolio holder Councillor Brian Ellis, or planning portfolio holder Councillor Mary Maynard may all be likely candidates to take over the leadership mantle, adding, "I would encourage them to do so." Also remaining enigmatic, Alex said he would be quite keen to run in the next election, but he would have to wait and see when it is happening.
Other parties react to game-changing district vote. The minority parties on the district council have offered their reactions to this week's tumultuous election results. St Albans Labour Party leader Roma Mills said she sees the results as being trumped by Brexit. She said she was extremely sorry to see the lost seats, describing votes as a big protest against the national picture. Councillor Mills said, "I have knocked on a lot of doors. I have spoken to people who have said they would not vote for us because they wanted to leave the EU and they aren't happy. I've spoken to other people on the same street who voted Remain and were not going to vote because of that." She added, "I very much regret that people haven't looked at other issues. The turnout was generally low and I don't think this predicts anything." Councillor Simon Grover remains the only Green councillor representative across the district. He said although the results were disappointing for the party, he feels the overall picture is a positive one for the Greens. Councillor Grover said he was delighted that the votes have doubled and that the general feeling is that more people are voting Green. He said, "The first-past-the-post electoral system makes it really difficult for us to get a new seat. We would have needed to get about 26% to do that. Proportional representation would be fairer." In other areas, the Greens have gained more seats, some for the first time, and in some areas, there are four or five Green councillors. It's definitely worth keeping going. Councillor Grover said he's pleased that the Conservatives will now need to cooperate with Labour. And the Greens have described the atmosphere as being very jubilant for the Liberal Democrats, and the Tories were very depressed. He further explained that the Greens buddy up with the other independent parties in order to get more done and support each other, and joke that it can be lonely holding just one seat. David Mitchell gained a seat for the first time as an independent councillor for Redbourne, and said he was very excited by the prospect. He said, "I'm very pleased. Redbourne is traditionally conservative and hard to knock off their seats. I knew it was going to be very close. The biggest issue for Redbourne is saving the Greenbelt from being used for housing developments. Not that I'm against housing. People want to live and work in the same place. Redbourne isn't going to provide that. Redbourne objects to being a scapegoat." Councillor Mitchell is glad he now has a better platform to raise the issue. He sees the overall results as very interesting and remarked that the Conservatives have lost their grip on the council to the Lib Dems. He added, "I'm used to parish work, but this is a step up. I'm delighted to have got in and to be able to work very hard and represent the people of Redbourne." Councillor Mitchell also referred to his positive relationship with Councillor Grover and said that while he is independent for a reason, the Green Party are a group of people he admires. The next elections will be for the European Parliament. Registered voters will be able to take part in the elections on Thursday, May the 23rd for the Eastern Region, which will return the seven MEPs by a party list system of proportional representation.
This next article is headlined Climbers Raise Funds for It's OK to Say campaign. And it's illustrated by a lovely photograph of two children doing the charity climb at Westminster Lodge. Over 100 St Albans climbers have raised funds for the It's OK to Say mental awareness campaign. The event at Westminster Lodge Leisure Centre raised £545 for the initiative, which tries to take away the taboo surrounding mental illness. Founder Stacey Turner, alongside 119 others, took part in the challenge and scaled the full height of the climbing wall 356 times. Stacey will climb Mount Kilimanjaro on June 8th to raise awareness and funds for It's OK to Say. The money raised will enable Stacey to launch the It's OK to Say website ahead of her next huge climb. Stacey said, "I would like to thank everyone who got involved in the Climb the Mountain Challenge, including the climbers and the amazing team at Westminster Lodge who made this happen. The £545 will go straight to getting my website up and running, which will help me reach many more people with our advice and signposting services, as well as providing a great platform for my Mount Kilimanjaro fundraising effort. This has made a very big difference to me and my charity. Massive thanks to everyone who took part." Everyone Active General Manager Leslie Garner said, "We were only too pleased to help stage this charity challenge and delighted to see so many people turn out to support Stacey. We look forward to seeing the website go live and wish Stacey the best of luck in her training and preparation for climbing Mount Kilimanjaro next month. Meanwhile, I would like to thank my colleagues and climbing instructors who gave their time so generously to enable this event to go ahead. There was a lovely sense of community throughout as colleagues, members and visitors came together behind this great cause." It's OK to Say was launched on World Mental Health Day last year and aims to encourage people to speak out about their worries before they escalate. The campaign had a wealth of support from the local community, including St Albans City Football Club and St Albans and District Chamber of Commerce.
And now an article about food banks. And we have a great photograph here of a huge amount of food bank donations. In fact, nearly 1.5 tonnes of food for local food banks, which was collected by pupils at St Columbus College. So pupils at St Albans School have collected nearly 1.5 tonnes of food to support food banks. Year 12 pupils at St Columbus College organised the project in February after attending the launch of the 2019 Cardinal's Lenten Appeal at the Boreham Wood Food Bank. Food was collected over several weeks and donations were split between three charities: the Boreham Wood Food Bank, the St Albans and District Food Bank and the Open Door Homeless Shelter. 2 years ago, the school began to collect food during Lent to support local food banks. In 2017, students and staff donated 700 kilograms of food. Last year, 1.2 tonnes were donated. Augustine McMahone, a sixth form pupil at St Columbus, said, "Giving food is a simple act, but one that can give people dignity and, most importantly, meet a basic need. In Boreham Wood, there has been a 23% increase in the amount of food distributed since last year."
My next piece is a news item with the headline, Community Group Centenary. A Harpenden community group is commemorating 100 years of meetings with a celebratory event. The centenary, Tuesday at 3, meeting will be held at Southdown Methodist Church on Tuesday, 14th of May. At the event, guests will be welcomed by the sound of songs from 100 years with a cup of tea. Tuesday at 3 developed from the Women's Own Group, which began in 1919. Since its start date, they have never ceased to hold a weekly gathering. The organisation welcomes everyone to come along to their meeting every Tuesday from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. At their gatherings, they enjoy tea and cakes while singing hymns. They also have guest speakers, which will often provide entertainment. Mainly, they hope to provide people with interesting afternoons. They welcome anyone to come along to the meetings and their 100th year celebrations.
A St Albans Scout leader is stepping down, having dedicated 39 years of her life to leading a cub pack. Pat Wadsworth of Beechwood Avenue has volunteered in various roles at 2nd St Albans Cubs for almost 40 years and is now the leader. She has been heavily involved in all aspects of scouting, and some of her early cubs she has worked with are now parents of cubs at her group. Assistant Cub Scout leader Jackie Trotman said, "Pam has done a great service to the community by giving up so much of her time. She started off helping out as a parent when they were short of leaders, when her son was little. Pam is very kind, thoughtful, very fair and a great person. She loves the gang show and goes to see it every year with her cubs." If you are interested in volunteering, visit www.hertfordshirescouts.org.uk.
This next article is about plastic pollution and has a photograph of our St Albans MP, Anne Main, together with representatives from St Albans Friends of the Earth and Plastic Free St Albans. St Albans MP Anne Main has called for action on plastic pollution. Mrs Main met with a representative from St Albans Friends of the Earth and Plastic Free at St Albans to hear their concerns about environmental damage caused by plastic. The MP, who is chair of the all-party parliamentary group on the prevention of plastic waste, urged the government to back a plastic pollution action plan. The plan aims for near zero plastic pollution by 2042. It also calls for work to begin immediately on reducing pollution from hard-to-replace plastics like tyres, clothing and paint. Mrs Main said, "Everyone can help tackle the plastics crisis by making changes in their own lives, and I'm delighted to see what is being done locally. The government must also take action to stop the flow of plastic to our oceans." Anne Main joins over 20 MPs backing a plastics pollution action plan aimed at devising a lasting solution to the issue.
And now an article entitled "Health Secretary Urged to Consider New Hospital." Campaigners are holding a meeting to canvass support for building a new hospital central to St Albans, Watford and Decorum, rather than renovating Watford General. Members of the West Harts 21st Century Hospital Campaign Group argue that the proposed plans to renovate services at Watford General are flawed, will cost more than the estimates being put forward, and will result in nothing more than a sticking plaster job. West Harts Hospital's NHS Trust, WHHT, was given a spending limit of £350 million, ruling out the possibility of building a new hospital in a central location. Since then, the campaign group is raising money to commission expert hospital architects to prove to the Department of Health that a new hospital is the best option for West Harts. Gordon Yearwood, who is spearheading the campaign, said, "It is nothing short of madness to let this go ahead. If this amount of money is spent on Watford, we will not get another chance for generations to get to grips with the desperate need for a new West Harts hospital fit for the 21st century. The situation is dire. We only have less than half of the number of beds of the average hospital trusts in the UK, which leads to chronic delays at A&E and a constant bed blocking problem. We need to halt their plans, and the time window is small. Years of trying to make them see sense means that now we believe we have to go above their heads, and we need to do it now. We want a new hospital, but we also want to bring St Albans and Hemel Hempstead hospitals back into more use." Members of the New Hospital Campaign, a separate group, are also arguing that redevelopment of Watford General will cause significant disruption and a new hospital would have better transport links and better serve an increasing population. Campaigner Andy Love has written to Health Secretary Matt Hancock asking him to call in an independent review of WHHT's plans. He said, "Watford General Hospital is historically located in Vicarage Road to serve Watford and not West Harts. Public transport links to the hospital are inadequate. The hospital is right next door to a busy Premier League football ground and the hospital is built on a steep gradient. £350 million will not be enough, according to the WHHT's previous SOC, Strategic Outline case, to sufficiently update Watford General Hospital as well as its sister hospitals. All three hospitals are well past their best and require substantial investment to extend their working life. The West Harts Hospital's 21st Century Hospital campaign similarly called the buildings at Watford General dilapidated and dysfunctional, and after the meeting planned to take fully costed architect drawings plans for the kind of hospital they believe is needed to the Health Secretary, bypassing both WHHT and Harts Valley's Clinical Commissioning Group. So far, the group has raised more than £12,000 of their £38,000 target. The WHHT has previously defended its decision to maintain service in Watford, saying, "Due to constrained public finances, we need to revise our initial strategic outline case, which was based on funding of up to £650 million, and instead look at funding of closer to £350 million. This is still a considerable sum of money, and we are looking at various options for using this to transform hospital provision locally. However, it is not enough to build a new general hospital. Our costings show that this will cost upwards of £700 million. The public meeting will be held at St Mary's Church Hall in Sherwood Avenue, Marshalswick, St Albans, at 7:30pm on May the 15th. Mr Yearwood said, "Without professionals the Department of Health have worked with and who are respected by them, we are nothing more than a local campaign group. We want to go to them with plans that are costed and which will prove how much more cost-effective a new 21st century hospital would be. For a start, it would not produce the massive £50 million a year deficit that West Harts Hospital Trust drains from our NHS. We are appealing for people to help us now. We believe we are acting not just for you, but for your children and your grandchildren."
Clunky planning portal set to be revamped after ongoing problems. Problems with the council's website has left some residents struggling to have their say on housing decisions. People trying to view the St Albans District Council SADC planning portal have reported intermittent problems over a long period of time, included forbidden errors, blocking access or deleting comments. It was completely down on multiple days in early April, meaning residents may have missed deadlines for consultations on planning decisions which were affecting them. Planning portfolio holder at SADC, Mary Maynard, said, "Sorting out this problem was one of the first things she set in motion when she was appointed to the role. She described the site as hopeless and clunky. We have been aware of the issues which started last summer. It was intermittent before the real problem happened in April. SADC are working towards moving the planning process onto a different, more user-friendly platform. In the meantime, we are trying to find ways to keep what is on there going." She believes the problems were caused by an upload of large documents onto the SADC pages, including infrastructure work for the local plan. Councillor Maynard added, "It is very important that people can view the planning documents and we have to do everything we can to ensure and that we are. We have invested in completely replacing it with a new platform." She said there were planning documents going back 20 years on the outdated technology. "I'm looking forward to seeing something new because I use it all the time." Head of Corporate Services at SADC, Simone Duval, said, "We have had issues with our planning system for some time. We are working on a significant upgrade which is currently being tested and we hope to launch this summer. The upgrade should improve both performance and the overall customer experience. In the meantime, we are trying to stabilise the intermittent performance issues as we understand how frustrating it is for people if they have to try again at another time. We are very sorry for the inconvenience this is causing. If the system is down, people can still make comments on planning applications by email, post, or from the link on our planning homepage. Planning applications can also be viewed too at the council's offices during office hours.
Road safety improvements set to be put in place ahead of secondary school opening. Harpenden's new secondary school is set to receive council funding to improve road safety around the school site. Herts County Council's Cabinet will agree funding to support highways improvements for Catherine Warrington School in Harpenden in a meeting on Monday. The new school, which is set to admit pupils from September, is being delivered by the Department of Education through its free school programme. The County Council is supporting the scheme by purchasing the site for the school and committing funding for playing fields and off-site highways works. Up to £4.6 million in funding will be released to fund highways improvements in the area surrounding the school, including measures to support sustainable travel. These include traffic calming and road safety improvements to allow pupils to travel to and from school more safely, a cycle track, a footpath and a bus stop, a road widening and remodelling, and new entrances built from the highway onto the school site. Jenny Coles, the County Councillor's Director of Children's Services, said the council has actively supported the new Catherine Warrington School to serve Harpenden and the surrounding communities to provide much-needed school places. This additional funding will enable the scheme to continue to progress at pace, and we are continuing to work closely with the Harpenden Secondary Education Trust, the Department for Education and the principal contractor, Keir Easton, towards the opening of the school for its first cohort of pupils in September 2019. Catherine Warrington was initially due to open in September 2018, but this was delayed due to multiple planning hurdles. Construction is currently underway and a two-storey sports centre is being built, which will initially be converted into temporary classrooms for the first year intake in September. The main school building, constructed to accommodate 1,150 pupils and 65 classrooms, is due to be completed by September 2020, and the sports centre will then be converted back to its original purpose. The school will be led by founding headteacher Tony Smith.
We now move on to the section where I'm going to read the names of people who have recently died as published in this week's Hearts Advertiser. Margaret Elizabeth Bresky, aged 84. Catherine Isabel Collins, aged 82. Patricia Lear, aged 71. Frances Norris, Nanny Nosh, aged 90. Muriel Beck, aged 83. Cheryl Lavinia Morris, née Lafone, aged 81. Simon Rossiter, aged 60. Sylvia Ellen Page, aged 95. Marianne Wilcox, née Cutchie, no age given. May they rest in peace. This article is headlined Girl, Aged 8, Invents Game for Disabled Children. And it's accompanied by a very sweet photograph of Summer Phillips with the card game she invented. An 8-year-old girl from Radlett has invented a card game that is benefiting disabled children across the UK. Summer Phillips was on holiday with her family in Turkey when she was inspired by the card games she had been playing to invent her own. Her parents were so taken by the game, 9-0, that when they got back from holiday they decided to produce the game through their own business. Over 1,500 packs of the number game cards have been sold in under 4 months. Her father, Mark, said, "Summer has a very caring nature and she was conscious that she wanted to help others. She researched a number of charities that she wanted to support before suggesting that for every pack sold, she would donate a pack to Cornwall Children, the national charity that provides practical and emotional support to disabled children and their families, to give to the children that they support." Mark, 42, said, "Rest assured, if we didn't believe in the game, we wouldn't have produced it." Natalie, 37, said, "Summer loves maths at school, so that possibly helped in the creation of the game." Summer, an avid horse rider and gymnast, enjoyed helping to design the finished product. Summer said, "Mummy and Daddy have a woman who helps design pages on their website, and I met her to talk about how the cards would look. It was really exciting seeing it all come to life and I learnt a lot about the production process. I couldn't believe it when the cards came out and we started selling them on Amazon and now on our own website." Julia Lunn, Family Services Manager at Cornwall Children, is delighted by the success of the card game. She said, "We can't thank Summer enough for thinking about it when she was developing 9 to Nothing. We run monthly activity clubs for disabled children and we're looking forward to giving packs of cards to the children who attend the clubs. It's an educational game and it's extremely good for number sequencing, so they'll be having fun and learning at the same time."
And now an article about a competition. To win tickets for this year's Herts County Show and explore the county's finest. The Herts County Show is coming up and readers are invited to take part in a competition to win free tickets for a weekend of food, farming, entertainment and shopping. The show will take place over the end of Maybank holiday weekend, Saturday and Sunday, May the 25th and 26th, with a new timetable of attractions, music and entertainment at the showground off Dunstable Road, Redbourne. There will be a pop-up Todd in the Hole stage, where local artists will perform all weekend, alongside storytelling magic from Hit Theatre. There will also be a climbing wall and a BMX ring with a participation area for people to get involved. On Saturday, representatives from the UK's Strongest Man competition will attempt a record-breaking tractor pull, and on Sunday they will take part in a main ring lift. Visitors will have a chance to shop local at the 3 Made in Hertfordshire marquees, and this year there will also be an Etsy Hertfordshire marquee, giving shoppers the chance to buy from local craftsmen. Headline entertainment across the showground includes Atkinson Actions Horses, who have appeared in shows such as Poldark and Victoria, and the unique Hertfordshire Farmers Display. New for 2019 is a dog and duck show in the countryside area from the creators of the Sheep Show, as well as new craft demonstrators. There will be a grand parade of livestock, a chance to see the animals at the Hertfordshire Farmyard, a falconry display, a dinky derby on miniature horses, a school scurry showdown, charity event and a chance for children to meet basset hounds and beagles. Each of the 3 food courts at the show will provide a range of local food, including craft beer from local brewers, and the new farmer's bar and kitchen will offer a rustic hub of food and drink, including a gin bar. To enter the competition and be in with a chance of winning one of 5 family tickets to the show, readers must answer the question, how many Made in Hertfordshire marquees are there for 2019? Entrants will need to supply their email address and daytime telephone number along with their name, the town or village they live in and their answer. Entries should be emailed to hertsad@archant.co.uk with the subject Herts County Show Competition, by the closing date of Friday, May the 17th.
Kympton May Festival weekend raises thousands despite weather. Kympton, Hertfordshire's largest May festival, had a great 4-day weekend of festivities despite the mixed weather of sleet, rain and sunshine. Festival Chairman John Hills revealed, "The 55th May Festival in the village has been one of our best yet, and although the weather was mixed, almost all of our events sold out and has gone on to make its best years in terms of fundraising. The village raised over £17,000 through assorted events, keeping in line with the overall cartoon theme of this year's event. Kicking off on the Friday afternoon with an art show, sell-out wine tasting and two films, Ralph Breaks the Internet and Bohemian Rhapsody, the festival provided a great family day out. I'm delighted that we're able to provide such an entertaining weekend for all of those who come, but there is also a serious side to the event, and the money raised will go to host good causes both in the village and further afield," John added. Good causes included Kimpton Church, Dacre Rooms Kimpton, Kimpton Memorial Hall, and a number of other groups, many of whom are yet to apply for funding. The festival also held a procession of the May Queen and her attendants, a fun run, a tribute madness night, the Brains of Kimpton quiz night, a dog show, and the Kimpton Entertain Show. The dog show awarded prizes to the prettiest bitch, most handsome dog, cutest puppy, under 12 months, waggiest tail, best rescue, fancy dress, best veteran. Dog judges would be the most likely to take home and the best in show. The last day of the festival ramped up the revelry with a grand auction, some maypole dancing, a grand prize draw and cream teas on the Kimpton Green. John is hoping Kimpton 2020 will be an even bigger success and has already started planning the festivities. Work has already started on a number of editions. We will also be distributing funds raised this year, so our work continues throughout the year. So if you want more information of the festival, you can look at Kimpton Festival, all one word, .co.uk.
This next article is accompanied by a picture of three paintings which have previously been auctioned off by Cheffin's Auction House. And the article's entitled, "Online Bidder Investigation Could Prompt a Second Auction of County's Art Collection." A number of items from Hertfordshire County Council's art collection may have to be sold off for a second time, amid fears that an online bidder could have been deliberately pushing up the prices. A total of 82 of the council's drawings, paintings and prints went under the hammer at Cambridge-based auction house Cheffin's on April the 25th. But following the auction, concerns were raised about the behaviour of one particular online bidder. As a result, a hold has been put on the sale of all of the items in the auction that were bid on by this particular individual, including a number of items owned by the County Council. And, pending the outcome of the investigation, a number of items could go under the hammer for a second time. Commenting on the situation, Martin Millard, director at Cheffin's, said, "The Auction Technology Group is conducting a full investigation into suspicious bidding behaviour on the part of one online bidder during the Cheffin sale on Thursday, April the 25th. Investigations are ongoing and we will not be publishing any results from the sale until we have further clarity on the situation." March saw the first items from the council's collections auctioned off by Cheffin's for a total of £444,000, with individual items selling for up to £37,000. In advance of the latest auction, estimates for the 82 selected works, ranging from £30 to £200, were said to be more affordable than those in the first sale. Nevertheless, a number of the works, not included in the ongoing investigation, went for sums that exceeded their estimates. They included Port Leven by Bertha Florence James for £600 and Harbour Wall by Charles Bartlett, which sold for £400. Watercolour, Autumn Bunch by John Humphrey Spender went for £480 and John Cole's Oil on Canvas Blue South raised £650. The council built up its impressive collection over a number of years after starting to purchase artworks that could be loaned to schools in 1949. In 2017, councillors took the controversial decision to sell off or give away the bulk of the collection. Funds raised from the sale of artworks, the council has said, will be used to improve the condition and visibility of nationally significant sculptures that it owns and invested in the pieces it retains to increase accessibility and to improve display and interpretation.
Next, our pick of some of the radio programmes that you might like to listen to as they're broadcast during the week ahead. Starting with Saturday, May 11th, and a reminder that it's always worth thinking of tuning in to Radio 4 Extra if you run out of options that appeal elsewhere. On Saturday, for instance, you can hear With Great Pleasure at 2:15 p.m. when publisher Carmen Khalil selects her favourite pieces of prose from John McGurhan to Angela Carter. Later on at 7 p.m. you could try Being David Sedaris when the British-based US author joins Emma Freud in her kitchen to discuss his life and listen to extracts from his extensive BBC archive dating back to the 1990s. David Sedaris has a wonderful turn of phrase and that ability to make you laugh at the most mundane domestic scenario. He makes refreshing listening amidst the current new agenda. Radio 4 Extra is a digital station and it's available on Freeview 708, Sky 0131 and Virgin 910. Over on Radio 4 on Saturday evening, there's an interesting sounding archive on 4 starting at 8 p.m. It's called The New Philosophers and the Death of the Interview. And over the course of the hour, Janine Gibson, former Guardian executive and BuzzFeed UK editor-in-chief, asks if the unchallenged options of podcast polemicists are leaving us blinkered to the views of others. The development of the web has meant that conventional broadcasting, when you hear contrasting opinions in discussions, is in decline. So what does this mean for our future understanding and participation in debate? It's all explored at 8 p.m. on Saturday on Radio 4.
On Sunday, May the 12th, the popular long-running Desert Island Discs returns to Radio 4 with a new series, and Lauren Laverne's guest is the BAFTA award-winning documentary filmmaker Louis Theroux. He talks about his childhood with his famous travel writing father, Paul Theroux, why he wanted to go to boarding school, and how he got his first big break in television via the American satirist Michael Moore. Louis Theroux may even mention the mind-boggling interview he did with Jimmy Savile. Desert Island Discs starts on Radio 4 at 11:15 a.m. The food programme is always worth a listen at 12:30 on Radio 4. And this week, Chef Angela Hartnett joins presenter Sheila Dillon on farms in Herefordshire, Cumbria and Cornwall to meet the 2019 Best Food Producers who've won this year's BBC Food and Farming Awards. There's a recent addition to the listening on digital radio that you might like to try if you haven't already. It's called Scala Radio and broadcasts a mix of classical and popular music. At 1 p.m. on Sunday, there's a new series called TV on the Radio, in which the composer Segun Akinola, he composed the Doctor Who music, explores the evolution of TV music from Thunderbirds to Poldark, Game of Thrones and Fleabag. You'll find Scala Radio online at scalaradio.co.uk. Then at 1:30 on Radio 4, psychotherapist Philippa Perry presents When Parents Split, in which she explores the profound effect divorce has on the 80,000 British children whose parents fight for custody each year in the courts. It's a tough but important listen, recognising the long-term damage that can be done to offspring when their parents are at war.
And now to programmes that are broadcast each day from Monday to Friday. The book of the week on Radio 4 this week is L.E.L., which is how poet Letitia Elizabeth Landon was better known. She lived from 1802 to 1838, and in this biography by Lucasta Miller, you can hear how the dubious editor of the Literary Gazette, William Jerdon, became the mentor of a young female poet who wrote passionate verse for his magazine. Book of the Week is on each day at 9:45 in the morning and is then repeated in the early hours at 12:30 a.m. The drama at 10:45 each morning is by Jeremy Raisin. Cuckoo is set between the late 1930s and the early 1940s and tells the story of Jeremy's mother and grandmother based on letters, diaries, divorced transcripts and an unpublished manuscript. Cuckoo is on Radio 4 at 10:45 each day and repeated in the evening at 7:45. The composer of the week over on Radio 3 each day at 12 p.m. is Robert Schumann and concentrates on Schumann's years in Düsseldorf and the creative stimulus that this move gave to his compositions. Book at Bedtime at 10:45 each evening on Radio 4 also now goes out just after midday. This week it's The Doll Factory by Elizabeth McNeil in her debut novel published after she won the 2018 Caledonia Prize, a Scottish literary prize for unpublished writers. She then had publishers beating a path to her door with 14-way auction and a six-figure advance at the end of it. The Doll Factory is set in the early 1850s, telling the story of Iris, an aspiring artist who works in a doll-making shop and is asked to model for a pre-Raphaelite artist. Elizabeth McNeil used Lizzie Siddle as her inspiration for her fictional character. Lizzie Siddle, who started off working in a milliner's shop, was the model of Millias's drowned Ophelia and later became an artist in her own right. Book at Bedtime is at 12 noon and at 10:45 p.m.
Other radio highlights this week include the return of Just a Minute on Monday, May the 13th. This is the 84th series, would you believe? Nicholas Parsons is still the host, with panellist Giles Brandeth, Paul Merton, Jenny Eclair and Kerry Godleyman. The start time is 6:30 p.m. on Radio 4. And two programmes to note on Thursday, May the 16th. The first is the return of Ramblings with Claire Balding, who goes walkabout with a group of Australian women who call themselves the Norfolk Broads. As they walk a stretch of Norfolk's Boudicca Way, they reveal how they all ended up in this eastern corner of England and how they adapted to the climate and the locals and how they discovered fun and companionship by exploring their new home on foot. Always a good listen. Ramblings starts at 3 p.m. on Thursday on Radio 4. And fans of the late Jeremy Hardy, the comedian who sadly died earlier this year at the age of 57, will want to tune in later on Thursday at 6:30 p.m. as his friend and fellow broadcaster Sandy Toksteth narrates the first part of a two-part tribute called When Jeremy Hardy Spoke to the Nation. Expect extracts from the news quiz, I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, and of course his series Jeremy Hardy Speaks to the Nation, as well as his last broadcast, Jeremy Hardy Feels It. That tribute starts on Thursday at 6:30 p.m. on Radio 4. Lastly, Friday night is Music Night on Radio 2, and on Friday, May the 17th, marks the 80th birthday of next month of songwriter, composer and producer Tony Hatch. His career has included hits for Benny Hill, Connie Francis, and themes to Crossroads and Neighbours and the 1968 hit Joanna, sung by Scott Walker. But he also composed all the hits for Petula Clark, like Downtown, I Know a Place, Who Am I, Don't Sleep in the Subway, and Colour My World. So, lots of old favourites to look forward to on Friday Night is Music Night on Radio 2 on Friday at 8 p.m. Enjoy listening.
We have now come to the end of this recording. So from Rosemary, Jackie, Kalpana and Peter, and from Alex, who recorded and edited this edition, and Jill, who chose the radio selections, goodbye and here's to the next time.